Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back. This is episode number 415. It's great to have you back with us. I'm actually recording this episode well in advance because I have to go to the Grand Lodge sessions for the state of Illinois. I am really excited about this year's Grand Lodge sessions. There's a lot going on, and I hope to see many of you down here. If you're listening to this, Grand Lodge is over already, so I hope we hung out and had a beer or a Coke or whatever, and had fun and shared some fellowship while we were down there. My sincere thanks goes out to worshipful brother Jason Richards, who hosted our program last week, and he read a paper by brother Joe Martinez, which was, of course, one of the premier articles making its debut in the Fraternal Review magazine, the Southern California Research Lodge magazine. So if you go to theresearchlodge.com, check that out, get a subscription. You get it in PDF and in print. If you buy the print version, you get both. Otherwise, you'll end up just getting, you can do a PDF-only version. Some of you asked, I took a picture of Joe's article on my tablet, and somebody said, what is that? Is that a Kindle? What is that? And I said, no, it's a Remarkable tablet. So that's what I use for note-taking, but I also use it for a PDF reader because I can highlight and write on each page. So if you were curious, that's what that was. Now, I need to address something else. I said I would have illustrious Brother Harrison on the show this week for an interview about Ray V. Denslow. Well, the truth is, I have him on this week, and it's because we have the Masonic Minute. Actually recording an interview with illustrious Brother Steve this week, and it will be featured next week in the episode. That should come out on the 13th of October, and we're really excited about that. Something else just in the news I do want to mention, I will be, and I'm not sure if this is in my speaking schedule or not, but I'm going to be speaking at the Grand Lodge of Colorado on their symposium, which is happening on October 12th, 2019. So the week after I get back from the Grand Lodge of Illinois, the following weekend, we're going to be at the 2019 Colorado Masonic Symposium. At the time of recording this, it is 11 days, 1 hour, 59 minutes, and 46 seconds away. That's right, they got a ticker on their website. Please go check it out. It's symposium.grandlodgeofcolorado.org. The best Masonic educational event of the year, they say. The annual Colorado Masonic Symposium brings together speakers and experts on topics of interest to Masons for the worthy contemplation of the craft. Combining good company, good food, and fine fellowship along with ideas worthy of due Masonic inquiry, the Colorado Masonic Symposium provides an opportunity to meet like-minded brothers from around the state and enjoy a day of thought-provoking Masonic discourse. Their schedule is posted there. I'll just give you a brief rundown. They have welcome and introduction. I think in the first one up, Symbolism 101, which is really the Esoterics 101 presentation, there will be a few new tweaks to it. Again, it's designed to be a beginning look into the deeper mysteries of Freemasonry. It's ideal for brethren that need exposure to the concept of quote-unquote esoteric Masonry, schools of wisdom, hidden symbolism, and hints at the ultimate revelation are explored within this presentation. We've also got some great stuff. We've got Right Worshipful Brother Michael Moore on the Lost and Forgotten Working Tools, the Mystical Michelangelo with Worshipful Brother Brian Conrad, Symbolism of Initiation by Right Worshipful Brother Kevin Townley. Don't want to miss that one. Then there's going to be lunch. Then they have Art and the Muse, Brother Adam Kendall. Don't miss that. He's fantastic. They have The North and Its Significance in Masonic Ritual by Worshipful Brother Van Troy Perazzo. Symbolism of the Masonic Apron, Worshipful Brother David Rayton. Renaissance Emblems and Freemasonry by Brother Eric Weddington. We have Working Tools of an Entered Apprentice by Worshipful Brother Aaron Klostermeyer. Masonic Research Methodologies, which will be a panel discussion or workshop with myself and Brother Adam Kendall. But the really cool thing is we've got some breakout sessions where the State Education Officer of Illinois, my best friend Scott Duball, is going to be with us all day. And he is a foremost expert on many things. Notwithstanding, Masonic Research. So you're going to want to pick his brain too. Then they've got the Worshipful Master Secret Authentic Leadership, which is Worshipful Brother Bobby Jukum, and the Greatness of the Lesser Lights, Most Worshipful Brother Adam Hathaway. And then, of course, 6 to 8 p.m., no Masonic education would be complete without some sort of a festive board, so they've got a banquet with keynote Right Worshipful Brother Ray Dunn. He's from Denver 5, which is a fantastic Masonic lodge, and you've all known, if you listen to this podcast for a long time, I had Brother Colombo, who is a Worshipful Brother of Denver Lodge also. And he's also, Colombo, that is, was also the man behind much of the layout for the Rocky Mountain Mason magazine. So this is really an amazing opportunity to go to. I know I'm taking up a little bit of time talking about it, but it's a really big deal, and I think you all should make it a priority. You can get tickets right now. They're on sale. And the tickets there for registration, they have an individual registration, which includes lunch at $75. They do group for 10 or more is $65. Festive board dinner is $27.50. And then there's the fraternal donations and individual registrations after October 4th at 12 p.m. No lunch provided. $65. So get on this as soon as possible. You're probably hearing this if it's on Sunday when this comes out. You're hearing about it on the 6th, so you might run into some issues. So maybe email them and see if you can get on the list for dinner or what have you. But it should be a wonderful event. So this week I've got two papers, and of course, one of them is a fantastic piece that just ran on the Midnight Freemasons. I loved it so much as a great blog. I wanted to read that. And I also wanted to read a really interesting piece by an unknown author. There's a blog out there that is run by an anonymous brother. And maybe I know who it is, maybe I don't, but we'll protect all anonymity here. I wanted to read a post that he wrote, which I found to be really insightful. It comes from the heart, and so we'll read that coming up. And of course, illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison right in the middle, so don't go anywhere. Hang out for a few minutes while we pay the bills, and we'll get right into the education. Right after this. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skin Care. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark. It is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. Super! All right, we're all done paying the bills, except for I do need to mention a couple more things. If you support us on Patreon, which is the exact same thing as supporting us there on PayPal, whether you are a fellow contributor or a producer, we appreciate it. Check it out, patreon.com/WCYpodcast, or maybe it's WCYpodcast/Patreon. Either way, search for Whence Came You or WCY Podcast on Patreon, and you'll find us, or you can just head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on support through Patreon. Same exact tiers again as our PayPal subscribers. And two more things really quickly before we hop into the education. People have been hitting me up and asking how much are the tickets going to be for Masonic Con Chicago. Well, they don't know yet. I am doing my best to crunch numbers and to keep things super affordable. I can tell you that tickets will not be cheaper than $100. I know that. And that's just due to the massive size of the event and flying out 11 speakers. So we're going to have a phenomenal premier event that will not be matched anywhere near this caliber in our locale of the country. So just keep that in mind. Also, our brothers of Texas, I just saw that Texas Masonicon has their dates for the Texas Masonicon 2020 already. They're looking at July 25th, 2020, and it runs all day. It's starting at 8 a.m. So go to TexasMasonicCon.com for more information on that. It's from Fort Worth Lodge 148. They're doing a phenomenal job, Ritmore and all the brothers out there. So check that out. All right, so the first piece this week is called Reciprocal Mentoring and Why It's the Key to Freemasonry's Future. It's by Midnight Freemason contributor, worshipful brother Darren A. Laners. When I posted this originally on the Midnight Freemasons, I really kind of super focused on one quote within the paper. The whole paper is wonderful, but the quote that I chose to kind of promote the piece says, "Suddenly, the mantra of we've always done it this way can be replaced with, let's try something new." And that might be scary, but let's hear what worshipful brother Darren A. Laners has to say. A few years ago, reverse mentoring was the hot new trend in the business world. It was an initiative in which older executives are paired with and mentored by younger employees. It is seen as a way to bring older employees up to speed in the areas that they might be lacking knowledge in, such as new technology, current trends, and social media. This turned the idea of mentoring on its head by allowing younger employees to feel empowered and to help change the corporate culture. Freemasonry, in almost all circumstances, uses the traditional model of mentoring. Recently, I've read a fantastic series of articles by Midnight Freemason founder Todd E. Creason. In his latest article in the series, Freemasonry's Future Part 2, Todd asks the following question, quote, "How do you think future generations of Freemasons are going to act if we don't teach them to be Freemasons, serve as examples, and correct them gently and compassionately when they need it?" End quote. While I agree mentoring is important, I view the best approach as a hybrid of reverse mentoring and traditional mentoring known as reciprocal mentoring. Let's face some hard facts. What we've been doing in Freemasonry isn't working. Todd is absolutely correct in stating that one of your responsibilities as a Freemason is to be an example for and to teach the new ones. However, by the same logic, I think the new ones can teach the experienced ones as well. They can serve as examples, and they should also be able to correct the experienced ones gently and compassionately when they need it. Instead of creating a dialogue between the inexperienced and experienced, traditional mentoring in Freemasonry is applying a paradigm that is flawed because it's only allowing one idea, which is the idea that the older experienced Freemasons know what the younger or inexperienced ones want or need. This is a primary factor in why we're not having any great success in retaining new or younger members. As mentioned above, the paradigm where older or experienced Masons assume that they know what the younger inexperienced members need is flawed. The flaw is present because the older Masons are using themselves and what they needed at that age and applying it to the younger Masons. It is the equivalent idea to the old past master who objects to every new idea brought up during the stated meeting because, well, we've always done it this way. Times have changed. The world has changed. Technology has changed. So, I'm going to suggest a radical idea. Freemasonry needs to change. We need to change the idea of mentorship. Mentorship needs to work not only from the top down, but also from the bottom up. This past April, Todd Creason invited Greg Knott and myself to join him at Vitruvian Lodge in Indianapolis, where he had been invited to speak. Todd spoke about how he recently joined a new church. The pastor of the church had an uncanny ability to figure out his congregation's individual talents, and he used them for the betterment of the congregation as a whole. In Todd's case, the pastor discovered that he could play piano. It wasn't too much longer after that that Todd found himself playing the organ at his church services. Todd's point was that in order for Masonry to succeed, we need to make sure that everyone was given a role, that everyone has unique talents, which, if utilized, could better the fraternity, but that we need to seek out those talents. This is exactly what we should be doing as part of our intender or mentoring programs. For those of you that are unfamiliar with the term, the Intender Program is a mentoring program that the Grand Lodge of Illinois set up to assign a new candidate, an experienced Freemason, to guide him through his degrees, teach him the catechism, and how to be a Freemason. I'm certain that it probably exists in every Grand Lodge, even if it's known by a different name. It is during this time that the Intender should be learning what skills the new candidate might possess or lack. It is also the time where the intender should be looking at helping the new candidate with skills in the areas where he lacks them, but also giving them a purpose in teaching others in areas where he possesses skill or knowledge. This is also the time where expectations of both parties are defined and the rules of the mentoring relationship are agreed upon. For example, if a younger Master Mason has no desire to immediately be placed in a chair, then is it fair to him to put him into a chair immediately? By the same token, would you make the oldest member of your lodge the chairman of the social media committee if he's barely able to work a PC? Wouldn't it make more sense to have the younger Master Mason take on that role, but maybe help teach the older member social media? And have the older member sit in the chair and help teach the younger Master Mason his role in that chair? The mentoring process should be reciprocal. Furthermore, the intender should be gathering an idea of what the candidate wants out of Freemasonry instead of assuming that they know what they need, as alluded to above. If the new Freemason wants to know about some of the more esoteric interpretations of the symbols and ritual, and his intender doesn't know much in that area, then we need to be able to have another brother with more understanding of that subject mentor him in that particular area. By the same token, you wouldn't want a brother who doesn't know ritual very well to serve as a mentor to a younger brother who is really interested in learning the ritual. We need to be flexible in our approach to mentoring. While a candidate may be assigned to one intender, that intender needs to be flexible enough to bring in other brothers to mentor that candidate in those areas where the intender lacks expertise, but the candidate desires knowledge. For this idea to work, there needs to be the acceptance of the idea by older or experienced Freemasons, that the younger or inexperienced Freemasons can teach them things. There needs to be an understanding that the younger or inexperienced Freemasons have value even if they lack life experience, and the younger or inexperienced Freemason needs to understand that there is value in the life experience and that the older Freemason can share. There needs to be trust, transparency, and the willingness to learn by both individuals in order for the relationship to be mutually beneficial. To state that the younger generation of Freemasonry needs to be taught the fundamentals of Freemasonry is making the assumption that the older ones don't also need this. In fact, I'd argue that the idea of tolerance that our fraternity teaches is more deeply ingrained in the younger generation of Freemasons than it is in the older generation. I believe this is an area where the younger Freemason can help the older generation. I think that the younger generation of Freemasons have a certain expectation of how the older Freemasons should behave outside of the lodge room. I personally think that being a Freemason doesn't end when the stated meeting is closed. If we want the older Freemason to teach standards, principles, and beliefs, then the older Freemason needs to be following those standards, principles, and beliefs. If they haven't been, the younger Freemason should be able to whisper wise counsel into their older brother's ear, as much as that older brother should be able to do the same to the younger Freemason. The trowel that is spreading brotherly love should also be spreading civility. We as an organization need to stop being afraid of change. Change is inevitable. Change is a good thing. Change is growth. For an organization that advertises taking good men and making them better, example, changing them for the better, we seem unable to make changes. As mentioned above, the inability of some of our members to accept change because we've always done something a certain way is our death knell. Our new or younger members can bring a perspective to the organization that older members might be unable to see. Unfortunately, too many times this can be followed by an unwillingness to accept. Many of our younger brothers have been in a lodge and offered a suggestion for improvement only to be dismissed outright. When this occurs, what do you think happens to that brother? He probably never returns for another meeting. The irony being that brothers who object to change because of always doing it this way lament why no one is showing up for meetings. Men do not want to be a participant in an organization where any idea they have are met with resistance at every step of the way. Mentoring isn't just teaching a new candidate or Freemason, it's also listening to their ideas and not being afraid to help to implement ones that will benefit the craft or the lodge. Why is reciprocal mentoring the key to our future? First and most importantly, it closes the knowledge gap for both individuals. As a simplified example, while the new or younger Freemason is learning ritual, the catechisms, and other areas where they have interest, the older Freemasons can be learning about technology, current popular culture, and social media. The younger Freemason learns what he needs to know in order to advance through the degrees, while the older Freemason possibly learns how to communicate better with their children or grandchildren, maybe by knowing who a certain singer is. My point is that life experiences and knowledge is shared, benefiting both parties by bringing them closer together. When this happens, you have a stronger relationship throughout the lodge. Instead of just knowing your brother as a brother, you form a deeper bond. There is a genuine brotherly love that forms. You create mutually beneficial relationships between brethren that will last well after the mentoring process ends. In creating a greater understanding, you also create new channels of communication and trust between brethren. Suddenly, the mantra of, "We've always done it this way," can be replaced with, "Let's try something new." This is because the past master who once saw the new ideas of a new or younger Freemason as being something that might potentially destroy the lodge, well, now he sees them as new ideas, as a genuine attempt to breathe new life into the lodge because he has established a strong relationship with that individual. When this happens, the new or younger Freemason is empowered. With empowerment comes investment. Instead of feeling isolated and a voice that doesn't matter, the new or younger Freemason is a stakeholder in the process. Because he was involved in the process, the younger or new Freemason is invested in the success of the idea and the lodge as a whole. People are more willing to go the extra mile for an idea that they're involved in. Once they are empowered, then their talent shines. They are allowed to lead if they want to be a leader, or educate if they want to be a lodge education officer, or to serve on a social media committee if that's where their talent lies. But ultimately, they have an important role in the success of the lodge. The more successful lodges that we have, the more secure we can feel about Freemasonry's future. That is the key. Not only to our survival, but if the model is applied on a grand scale, I feel it can be the key to our growth. If you create passion in an individual for the craft, the more likely they are to recommend it to their friends and neighbors. While we might not hit the numbers of our post-World War II heyday, I feel that we have an opportunity to change by slightly altering the mentoring process. We've always done it this way, it just isn't working. Darren A. Lehners. I just thought it was an interesting idea. You know, I work in an executive medical industry, and we have like mentor-mentee relationships. And not at the executive level, but the men that I've mentored in at work, and when I get assigned somebody, because that's kind of how it works, I learn from them, and they learn from me. I teach them some business acumen, and I can just recall just 4 years ago, I had a mentee who was like, "What do you mean you're not on Snapchat?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't even know what that is." And, you know, I'm all over social media, but I didn't do Snapchat because I heard, like, it's really just a quick thing and, you know, really wasn't a neat tool. And I still really haven't figured out a way to push the podcast out with Snapchat. It's probably not a thing. But he showed me something. So it is reciprocal, and that really has a lot of value. I can only imagine what it does in Freemasonry. And I think our successful lodges probably already do something similar to this without even calling it this or doing it this way. So kudos to Darren A. Lehners for articulating this alternative to the traditional mentoring experience. If you've got questions about this or comments, please leave them on the blog page for the Midnight Freemasons, or you can contact Darren directly at darren.lehners@gmail.com. Next up, let's hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in this week's Masonic Minute.
Question: how many Freemasons does it take to change a light bulb? Answer: none. Freemasons never change anything. Oh, how we laugh when we hear that one. And how we lament hearing, "We've never done it that way," or "In my day," or "The bylaws prevent it." That last one, of course, usually comes from someone who's never read the bylaws. It's true. We gather in our meetings and leadership conferences and vow we will change, or at least accelerate from our usual glacial pace to the breakneck speed of an aging snake. Then we go back to our daily routines and seemingly nothing happens. We're in a rut, and many of us, sometimes I think most of us, like our little rut. There are a couple of examples I saw during my time in the advancing line of the Missouri Lodge of Research. Brother Tom ended his tenure as a Grand Lodge official, and instead of sitting back and taking it easy, he became passionate about a long-standing project. He wasn't put in charge. He took charge. He spearheaded an effort to produce something that has become an important part of the Grand Lodge of Missouri. He would be the first to tell you he didn't do it alone. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about leadership. Brother Bill was a past master of a failing, well, faltering lodge. During his year as master, he managed a complete turnaround. At one point during his term, I attended an event where there were hundreds, yes, hundreds of brothers in attendance. I watched as he turned that lodge into what another brother called a shining star of Missouri Freemasonry. Given his demonstrated leadership ability, the Lodge of Research called on Bill to coordinate a project. That project succeeded beyond my expectations, and like Tom, Bill will insist he did none of it alone. He's just a guy who knows how to get things done. Kudos to Tom and Bill, right? Wrong. Both were criticized relentlessly. Tom overstepped his bounds. He moved too fast. He didn't do things the right way. Bill bullied his way in and attempted to take over the Lodge of Research. Not on my watch, brothers. You can take that to the bank. We can't have it both ways, guys. We can't change. We can't get things done. We can't increase our visibility and attract members by turning key players into pariahs. But in a lot of instances, we do. It makes it difficult to work within the system. I'm not advocating us all becoming loose cannons. Rather, I'm suggesting we recognize we have a lot of work to do to realize some of the goals we have all set for the fraternity, not the least of which is to mold the organization into something that will attract young men. We don't have to give up our core values to do that. We do, however, have to take action and honor, not vilify, the brothers who step up as leaders. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. As always, many thanks goes out to Stephen L. Harrison, our illustrious brother and creator of the Masonic Minute segments, who's really been doing these for a couple years now, and they're just phenomenal, and I love them so much. I've heard from many people that they could listen to Steve tell any story in the world because he's just such a good storyteller, and I completely agree. Imagine how cool it's going to be on the next episode of WCY Podcast when we have illustrious Brother Harrison here to tell us all about Ray V. Denslow. And you might not know who that is, and that's okay. You're going to learn. And what I hope you take away from it or going into it is how foundational this particular gentleman was in American Freemasonry in the 20th century. It is incredible. Now, you heard at the top of the program how to support this program, and I talked about Banker's Best. Now, I've kind of had some cryptic, shall we say, choice words about the organization from Levi Banker over the past few weeks. I've mentioned lower inventory and those kind of things, and it's been out for a few days now, and it's with mixed emotions, right? I'm very happy for Levi, but I would like to read the letter that he had posted for everybody out there, and it is as follows. From the desk of Levi K. Banker. Hi, everybody. I've written this letter to tell you all about 10 different ways, all saying roughly the same thing, but in different words. I also decided that each one just didn't feel right. So, away they went. Here is the hard, no BS fact. October 31st, 2019. Will be the last day that Banker's Best is open for business. I've decided that it was time to close up shop. I want to thank you all for your support throughout this adventure. Without each and every one of you, this weird dream would have stayed just that, a dream. 4 years ago, when I researched and started making beard oil for myself, my goal was to make a superior product to what I could find in stores and online. That goal has never changed. Just the scope at which it is fulfilled. 4 years after that first batch made in my living room, Banker's Best has now shipped orders to almost every state in the United States and across two oceans. I'm proud of what I've accomplished, and I'm also very humbled by the fact that each of you also believed in this thing enough to make it what it is today. So why am I doing this? I've asked myself this question a lot in the last few weeks. The simplest answer I can come to without writing an essay is that I'm closing Banker's Best because I want to. I'm not being forced to for any other reason than that. That doesn't mean that I came to the decision suddenly or without hours of thought and consultation from loved ones. It hurts me to think that I am leaving behind such awesome and loyal fans and customers, but it's time for me to step away and focus energy elsewhere. What happens now? Well, basically, it's business as usual until 11:59 on Halloween night, and then Banker's Best, as we all know it, will cease operations. After that, who knows? Again, thank you all from the bottom of my heart for all the love and support during this adventure. Signed, Levi. We all have personal adventures that we take throughout our lives. And Levi Banker came onto the scene and has an incredible product, incredible line of products that he made and developed, and was always crafting new stuff and pouring blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. And I watched him grow immensely. And what he's done for this program and assisting us in funding, you know, we can't thank Brother Levi enough. If you see him online, on social media, or maybe you drop him a line here or there, or maybe the next order you make, put a little note inside, you know, the thanks field or something, or special instructions. He's done just a phenomenal job. And I understand that sometimes we all just need to stop one thing and start something else. It's a personality trait. We get tired of one thing and we have to move on, or there are extraneous circumstances that pull us in different directions. It's kind of like, on occasion we go to the Greasy Spoon restaurant, right? And this is kind of us in masonry, or maybe it's with our jobs or whatever. We're doing 10,000 things, and if we could condense what we're doing just a fewer things, we all do those things now better, because we have more focus. And so I hope whatever Brother Levi decides to do with Banker's Best in the future, if it comes back maybe some point down the road, or who knows? He said who knows, so we don't know. But whatever the case is, we wish him all of the success and infinite thanks for what he's been able to do. You guys probably have an idea, but Levi, again, he's assisted this program by sending a portion percentage of sales of certain products that he developed just for us, really, and it helped fund this program. He is a mega producer of WCY Podcast. So, Brother Levi, it's not the end, right? But certainly want to wish you every bit of success in your new endeavors. The next piece that I would like to read comes from the From Darkness to Light blog page. This is a newer blog. It is by an anonymous brother, and I, on occasion, run across new posts. I mean, I'm a fan of it on Facebook. I like it, so I see when a new post comes out. I wrote the page. I said, hey, is it cool if I read this one? And the brother said, of course, thank you so much. And so I wanted to read this. It's largely because we have a massive community of Freemasons online, and there are so many varied opinions on the topic. And this particular topic I wrote about several years ago, and is a number one article on the Midnight Freemasons, actually, which was called The Skull and Crossbones in Freemasonry, You're Doing It Wrong. And that piece, again, has a lot of hits, and people loved it. But I'm just one person, and a lot of people write about this. And this one is called Hashtag No Skulls in Masonry. Just kidding, there are. And I just wanted to read this. So fair warning, if you're played out or tired of the whole skull thing, that's totally fine. I understand if you want to fast forward through this reading. But here we go. From Darkness to Light, published on September 18th, 2019. Hashtag No Skulls in Masonry. Just kidding, there are. The interwebs are aflutter this month with arguments and lively discourse about one of the most hotly contested topics in Freemasonry today, skulls. So why is this such a polarizing topic? Why does one side of the argument insist that the skull is an important symbol of the craft? Why does the other side of the discourse believe that it is a malicious symbol that inspires fear and has no place in the lodge? Who is right and who is wrong? To begin this conversation, we need to understand why the skull was used as a prominent Masonic symbol, why it appeared to fall into disuse, why American Freemasonry has little knowledge of its deeper usages, and why a clamoring for this symbol to return is becoming a prevalent topic, especially in the United States. A human skull used throughout history is a symbol that inspires thoughts of death. Most notably, it has signified the remains that we leave behind as mortal beings, and often evokes feelings of dread and fear of our own mortality. This idea permeates throughout history and is predominantly held by the majority of the human population. The fear of death has been a great motivator during the course of human history. It has motivated the explosion of science, medicine, and research into longevity. Fear of dying has affected the course of governments and nations and has charted the course of how people live their lives. On a few notable occasions, however, the skull has been used to impart lessons on how the mortality of man should be celebrated as we travel the winding road toward our immortality. Plato references the concept of death in his Phaedo, where he states, quote, "The one aim of those who practice philosophy in the proper manner is to practice for dying and death." History of Memento Mori, 2019. Marcus Aurelius wrote in his Meditations that, quote, "You could leave life right now. Let that determine what you do and say and think." Long after these sages of the past defined what our outlook on life and death should be, this idea morphed into what we now call the Memento Mori. The Memento Mori, adopted preeminently as a Christian motif in ancient times, successfully captures the meaning and emphasis of reflecting on one's mortality. The skull and crossbones attributed to the Memento Mori symbology, misunderstood and overutilized to describe danger or death, is an old symbol for reflection that predates craft lodges by centuries. To be clear, poison, danger, pirates, and fear are not the purposes of the Memento Mori. It is a symbol. You Freemasons may have heard of those before. This symbol is meant to instill reflection into the finite nature of our mortal existence, and the firm knowledge that our mortal remains are the remains of this transitory life. Even as far back as the first century before the Common Era, adepts into the mysteries of life regarded the Memento Mori as a symbol of reflecting on the transitory nature of our existence on this earth. Seen in the mural below, found in Pompeii and dated to 2200 years ago, the image displays our earthly remains as something we should be pensive of and to think about their image in terms of what we leave behind. Truer ideas could not exist in a more poignant location as Pompeii. Death, as the great leveler, is depicted in this mural, originally found in Pompeii. It can now be seen at the National Archaeological Museum of Naples. On either side of the skull, in perfect balance on the scale, are the symbols of poverty, the beggar's cane, and wealth, the scepter, meaning that death comes for all, both the rich and the poor alike. Freemasons should also pay special attention to the use of the plumb line balanced perfectly on the skull and a level at the top, showing that the weights of both wealth and poverty are equal on either side. Further denoting the balance that mortal death has for us all is the fact that the skull is perfectly balanced atop a wheel and never teetering to one side or the other. Other pre-craft depictions of the Memento Mori can be found in the hundreds of years before it rose to prominence in Masonic lodges. Another notable example is the Baroque era painting by Philippe de Champagne titled Still Life with a Skull. This painting represents, in one's opinion, the perfect representation of the focal points in the reflection of life, death, and mortality, and the importance of recognizing these ideas while living a complete and worthwhile life. On the left, a symbol of life, flowers in a vase, displays the frailty and beauty of the wonders of a life in this creation. In the center, the skull representing death and what one truly leaves behind. On the right, the hourglass, a striking reminder that we measure life by the sands of time, always moving in one direction from birth to an inevitable death. Freemasonry has lauded and derided the use of the Memento Mori in its official 302-year history. In the early days of the speculative craft, the Memento Mori featured much more prominently in our rituals, as evidenced by the more ancient tracing boards of the early 1700s as depicted. This tracing board depicted below is most recently dated to 1740 and was used extensively in the third degree ritual. Clearly depicted is a skull or a symbol of reflection within the walls of a coffin, a sprig of acacia at the head, and other symbols adorning this implement of instruction tell a unique story to those who understand its meaning. This board again comes to us from the 18th century craft and is likely based on the discourse or document from earlier still. What I can say is that listening to the ritual whilst viewing this picture should move someone to contemplate their own mortality in the context of what they leave behind as they transcend this part of our existence. This image also teaches us that our final resting place is a doorway to a new level of existence. In the end, what this long-winded blog post is trying to say is that skulls have been around in Freemasonry for a very long time. They predate the craft, and many of the teachings of the craft make use of these symbols. And we need to start acknowledging that fact. The current rise of Masons wanting to return to those traditions on the reflection of mortality and immortality, which live at the very core of the teachings of Freemasonry, are being stifled by a large number of Masons who were initiated, passed, and raised in a social club era of the craft, and want nothing more than to escape their spouses on a Thursday night and complain about dues going up $3 this year. Our preparation rooms should be transformed from the dingy and stinky rooms where candidates leave their car keys and neckties, and back to a room for reflecting on the meaning of their lives. What have they accomplished thus far, and what they hope to learn while walking down the winding road of life, from the first step into the preparation room all the way to the final lecture of the Master Mason degree, the initiate should ever be inundated with the fact that we will all one day die, that we need to contemplate how we spend the time we have, and that we leave this place knowing there is something more and greater and more vibrant than we can ever imagine. So, again, just some additional thoughts there on the skull and crossbones of the skull in Masonry. There's some great images in the blog post, and of course I'll link back to this paper in the show notes, as well as create a PDF of it and put it out for you all to have as a downloadable content if you have the app. Well, what an episode. We've had emotional highs, lows, some laughs. We've gotten some great news, but now it's time to say goodbye this week. So I hope you all have a wonderful week. Remember, Midnight Freemasons, three times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, the Masonic Roundtable, 9:30, 8:30 Central, Thursdays, and I'll see you all at the Grand Lodge of Colorado's Masonic Symposium in a week. Stay on the level. So once came you, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.